Hi, everybody. Welcome back to In the House. Today, we're talking about a hot topic, healthcare. COVID-19 has ravaged the planet, our economy, and our country. Healthcare in Canada is universal and understood as a fundamental right. We can agree that this has been a good thing, especially when we compare ourselves to our neighbors to the south. But COVID-19 has exposed our healthcare gaps and vulnerabilities. Our healthcare capacity is dismally low, or make that it couldn't get much worse. Of the 37 top developed nations, only Mexico is lower than us in terms of beds per capita, especially in our ICU. Dr. Stephen Ellis and I will talk about federal healthcare transfers and how we can change that in Canada. And we'll be talking about mental health and the opioid crisis with Sandy Sidsworth. We're going to catch up with her shortly, and the Enrichment Center here in the area, and MP Mike Lake. Are testing requirements at the airports too cumbersome? I certainly have seen that in my office, and we'll talk to Tourism Shadow Minister Michelle Ferrari about what needs to change. And finally, we'll talk about staffing. How do we get more nurse practitioners, doctors, and nurses into our healthcare system? And what does the federal government have to do with any of this? Your health and healthcare concerns heard today in the House.
Mr. Speaker, it's my pleasure to rise as the first time as Conservative MP for the Bay of Quinte.
This is the In the House podcast with your voice in the House of Commons, Bay of Quinte MP Ryan Williams.
When we talk about capacity for healthcare, when we talk about Bay of Quinte, we talk about the province of Ontario, we saw more lockdowns than probably most other jurisdictions in the whole world. At one point, we had even our golf courses locked down. But you can't blame the province for that. The problem started long ago when it came to capacity. And the decisions for lockdowns came because when we had surges of the pandemic, we simply did not have the room in our hospitals, in our ICUs, for any of those surges. And lockdowns were the only way to stop the surges from happening where we just couldn't take people into the hospitals. In short, we have a major healthcare capacity issue, and we need to increase healthcare transfers from the federal government to fix that, to fix healthcare. I sat down with MP Stephen Ellis, MP of Cumberland Colchester, to talk about healthcare capacity.
Thanks, Ryan. You know, I've been a family doctor for 26 years, 22 of them in Nova Scotia. And certainly what we see there is exactly what you described. The small hospital that I would work in, approximately 100 beds, the majority of time we were full or over capacity with our bed situation. And that was before the pandemic happened. And the studies would suggest that approximately 91 to 92% of acute care beds in Canada were full all the time before the pandemic happened. So clearly, this is not just a difficulty that exists with respect to the pandemic. It is related to the funding of healthcare, which we know has been an issue ongoing now for many, many years. And that also translates into the ICU beds as well, for which we have a fraction of many other countries, and certainly a tiny fraction compared to those of our neighbors south of the border.
Healthcare, of course, the provinces have its own jurisdiction, but the federal government has healthcare transfers. So we give a certain amount, a large amount of money to the provinces for healthcare. One of the things that we recognized when we were looking at this on the health committee, and you sit in the health committee, I did. Now I substitute sometimes. I'm in the science committee as well. But, you know, we looked at the amount of money that the provinces have asked for to increase capacity. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, I think the most important thing is that when you look at the platform that that we had for the last election, we wanted to increase the health transfers $60 billion. So a significant amount of funding going to the Canada health transfers. I think it's really, really important that people begin to understand that this problem has gone back decades, in fact, and has not kept up with the pace and the need of Canadians. And it's interesting, you know, even when you look at small towns, some of the studies would suggest that 40% of Canadians are not even confident that they could have their acute health care needs met at their local hospital. in time of an emergency. And so when you look at those kinds of things, those are the demands that, Canadians want to put forward to increase the federal funding in healthcare. And we know that going forward, that's going to be a necessary investment. That becomes very, very difficult now that the Liberals have created a debt, which is $1.2 trillion. And as you know, Ryan, increasing at $17.7 million an hour. So the kind of uncontrolled spending that the Liberals have focused on, some COVID spending, of course, we believe is necessary. That being said, there's many other things which they have frivolously spent money on, which has gotten us to this very, very difficult financial place. And couple that with the inflation high of 30 years. That's going to make it very, very difficult to make changes in the future for things that people need, such as healthcare.
And thank you, Dr. Ellis. That puts us into the theme of where we are right now. And this week in the House, the first week of February, we were debating a bill in the House of Commons called C8, which was really a Band-Aid solution, but $70 billion, not chump change, to provide more filters for school and to provide support for businesses that were off. And my whole argument was that $70 billion needs to go instead to health care. That if that $70 billion went to the provinces, including Ontario, how many more beds, staffed beds, can we add to the system to ensure that if we have another surge, if we have another pandemic, we do not have to shut down? I think that's the most important question, and I'll keep fighting that in the House as we talk about capacity, but we need to make sure this is a priority. I'll continue to do that as we continue talking through this in the House of Commons. Mental health has been a tough, tough component of COVID-19 in the last several years. My office received many calls, and I know friends and relatives and family members who have suffered mentally through COVID-19. We've had devastating restrictions on businesses. We've had businesses who've had to make tough financial and personal decisions. We've had individuals who have just really had a hard time through COVID-19. And the results of that have been a community and society that really needs some extra supports and resources as we deal with the aftermath and as we come out of this pandemic. Mental health is health. That's the most important statement we can make. We have to treat it as health and ensure we have resources that everyone can access. That includes healthcare professionals, access to counseling, and even sometimes just being a little kinder to one another. I caught up with Sandy Sidsworth to talk about mental health and what do we need to focus on.
I'm happy to add my voice to this conversation that's so important right now. What do we need in mental health? Wow. At this point, I think there has to be some compassion and empathy. And I know, Ryan, we have talked a couple of times on fellowship, and I don't mean fellowship in a clerical way, but I mean community fellowship, community capacity, the ability for us to all come together to celebrate, to mourn, to support, and to really get back to that place where we find common ground in all of the diversity and all of sometimes the hate that is coming through some of the struggles we're all having. It is so important that we understand that we already have a lot of tools for our own well-being in terms of resilience, but we're not sure anymore how to access them. And I think the isolation, being bombarded by so many things, whether it's a local level, a provincial level, a global level of negativity, it really starts to frame our own view of our entire world. And so having a chance to remember that there's kindness in the world, to remember there's good things that we can celebrate, to remember that there are people that are important to us in our lives that still have capacity to bring us joy, to let us see small things of kindness. I mean, wow. You know, somebody holding a door open these days can almost bring me to tears because we're all so vulnerable. And we talk about mental health and monies and more tools. And sometimes I think we just have to step back and look what we already have. Look what's already in our circle. And how do we access that better? How do we support better? And it starts from that piece. We have so much coming at us and continuing to come at us in terms of a housing crisis, in terms of food insecurity, in terms of our well-being, in terms of, you know, lack of affordability around healthcare and all of these things that weigh us down and our mental health. But we forget about friendship. We forget about celebrating someone's outstanding report card, or that somebody graduated, or getting married, getting engaged, the birth of a baby, or coming together to say, I'm sorry you lost someone you love so much. So I think there is a reflection piece for all of us to look at community capacity without the politics, without it being clouded by who's on what side, but just saying, this is who I am and what I bring to my community, and how do we work together to build us to a place where we feel safe and we feel connected and we feel that resilience and renewal that we all talk about. So I haven't got a lot of words of wisdom, but I thought, thank you for asking me what I felt and what I see. And to all the mental health workers out there, you are doing an amazing job and you're doing it with a lot of grace.
And I will continue to focus on working with our local mental health associations, other great mental health support systems, and what we need to improve on in the Quinte region. Another major issue through COVID and before COVID has been the opiate crisis. This week, MP Mike Lake had a very emotional speech about his own personal tragedy with the opiate crisis. His father passed away with an overdose from Oxycontin. Mike Lake spoke about this in the House.
I wish that he'd been able to better manage his physical health, a driver of so much of his pain in his 50s. I wish that in his case, Oxycontin hadn't been prescribed. And I wish that he'd had access to better tools and guidance when he tried to get off of it. Most of all, while I understand that stories are very powerful, I wish I didn't have this one to tell. That instead, my father could have known me as a member of Parliament and one that he'd be incredibly proud of. I wish that we all had so few stories to share that a night like this, set aside in the Canadian House of Commons for this purpose, wouldn't be necessary. But all the wishes in the world won't change the past, and they won't change the current reality. It's way past time we took meaningful action to tackle the opioid crisis and other significant issues of mental health in this country. Mr. Speaker, tonight I have hope. Hope that one day people will speak about this as a time when their elected parliament set aside hyper-partisanship to find evidence-based solutions to a significant crisis. Hope that one day someone will talk about how the trajectory of their life changed for the better because of what we're doing here tonight.
When it comes to the opiate crisis, we need to spend a lot of time in Parliament and our own community focusing on solutions to ensure we tackle this crisis head on and put Canada in the right direction. The opiate crisis is severe, it's extreme, and it does affect a large swath of our population. It's unknown yet through this pandemic if that has exacerbated the situation. But I can tell you now, it is something that we need to come together on with all parties, and we need to focus on solutions. Likewise, for mental health, we have to make sure we put precedent on making sure everyone has resources and that we spend a lot of time caring more for one another. If the last 2 weeks are in any indication, it has been a tough time for so many more people, and this country seems to be a little bit more divided than it ever has been before. When it comes to mental health, when it comes to this country, we need to find people united. We need to have hope, not fear, and just be kinder to one another as we move out of this pandemic and into the future of, hopefully, a very successful and strong 2022. The question I'm getting at my office every day right now is, why are we still PCR testing at the borders? When you do travel, you have to be double vaccinated, meaning that you've already had your vaccines. But what's happening right now is we are asking Canadians, when they leave the country, to have a PCR test that they pay for and receive before they come over the border. And then we're actually rapid testing randomly passengers, even though they're double vaccinated and have a PCR test. And because of our lack of capacity to get those tests back quickly, some people are isolating for 5 days. So it's a big complaint. Today, I've brought up this question with Michelle Ferrari. Hi, Michelle. Please let everyone know where you're from.
Michelle Ferrari here, Member of Parliament for Peterborough-Kawartha and Shadow Minister for Tourism.
Michelle, tell us what's going on with the borders and what do we need to fix?
You know, I think the question really is, and I don't know if you can hear in the background, I'm in Ottawa while I record this with you, and you can hear the horns. They haven't stopped. This convoy isn't going anywhere. And I think it really speaks to what's also happening in the travel industry, where you have a boiling point. And in speaking with as many stakeholders as I have in the tourism and travel industry, they're also reaching a boiling point. This is an industry that is 100% vaccinated. We now have studies coming out of the Johns Hopkins University that closing borders and restrictions are not helping or even making a big difference in terms of deaths related to COVID. Do we have to follow public health safety? 100%. But you're talking about people who are triple vaccinated for the most part. These PCR tests at the border are absolutely crippling travel in our industry, which is, you know, a significant economic downfall. We really have to look at what we're doing. We have to restore travel confidence. This is a seasonal operation. And, you know, Canadian tourism cannot rely just on domestic tourism. We need that international travel. And when we look over to the UK, they've opened back up for business. They're sitting at only 64% vaccination rate, and they've been able to maintain it. We're almost at 90% vaccination rate. And again, this is an industry that has 100% vaccination when we look at the airlines and, you know, the rules and guidelines to travel. So until we drop these PCR tests and restore travel confidence, we are in a very dangerous situation of losing one of the most important industries in our country. This is a huge, huge industry for our country. And again, as I've said many times before, this economic crisis is a mental health crisis. So the long and short of it is, drop the PCR tests at the border, get travel confidence back. You know, Canada is open, it is safe, and we need to restore these jobs. We need to get this economy back on track, and we need to let the world know that Canada is open for business.
Thank you, Ms. Ferrari, and absolutely. Canada is open for business. We are tackling this in the Health Committee, and certainly this is going to be something we continue to push the government on in the next few weeks.
Mr. Speaker, if we're going to spend money, whether that be for C2 or today for C8, I ask you this. Would it not be better for all Canadians that instead of money that helps businesses that are shut down, that it should have been money preventing the economy being shut down? This bill is no different. This $70 billion needs to be spent now in healthcare transfers to increase both healthcare and ICU capacity and to increase our healthcare professionals that we are desperately missing in our regions. We need healthcare professionals, nurse practitioners, nurses, and we need doctors. Mr. Speaker, in Bay of Quinte, we are short over 30 doctors. That means that residents who need primary health care are going to the ER. Canada is short over 70,000 nurses. Spending $70 billion more of taxpayer dollars without that money being invested into health care first and foremost is a travesty.
Something I was very passionate about in Belleville City Council was finding a solution to our lack of doctors and nurse practitioners. And I actually took on the topic of nurse practitioners in city council is very passionate about it. Nurse practitioners have almost the same scope of doctor, but more importantly, they're just another tool that we could look at to fill our primary healthcare gaps in this area. Again, I've talked to Dr. Stephen Ellis about our lack of healthcare in this country, and Stephen expands on that.
Yeah, I think the big things, Ryan, is this is a problem that exists across the country. Some of the studies would suggest that there's a need for perhaps 70,000 nurses alone across this country. And what we do know is that there are many Canadians who have studied abroad in medicine whose credentials now are not even accepted here. So even if we began to look at those situations in particular, those are already Canadian citizens who have studied and gained credentials at international universities, and that there's a possibility there that they could come on board very, very quickly because we don't have to worry about their immigration status, and that they could enter the Canadian workforce for us in a timely fashion. And certainly, you know, we need to have a look at this from a concerted perspective to look at how many physicians are we training here in Canada, and are we training enough? And you know, there, we also know that their work patterns have changed over the last, 30 years or so, in the sense that, you know, perhaps myself working as a physician wouldn't have worked as hard as the decade previous to me. And that trend probably continues, that people want a better work-life balance, which also then means that we need to train more healthcare professionals. We also know that because of the great country we live in, Canadians are living longer. They're living with more chronic illnesses because they are living longer. So those things are also important as well. So the other issue that you clearly relate to is having people work at their scope of practice. And that's a common theme that we have seen throughout the healthcare sector. And asking, so my wife's a pharmacist, asking pharmacists now to do immunizations, to do minor ailment assessments, to re-prescribe medications, to try and, as I said, have everyone working at their particular scope of practice. So when we look at those things, I think there are opportunities out there. The healthcare environment is changing every day. And I think that this government, again, has failed to keep up with those changes, which has left Canadians wondering, not only are they going to be able to access a physician, are they going to be able to have nursing care when they're admitted to hospital into a bed that's probably already full? So it's quite a dire situation, and you know, I think it's going to require some innovative thought, which I know that's part of the excitement that you bring to our caucus, is how do we use our great Canadian innovation, and we need to particularly look at these issues to understand them in a new light and how they are going to work in the changing economy as we move forward. I think the other interesting thing that we need to touch on as Canada's conservatives is to look at preventive medicine. How do we help people become more active? How do we help them tackle the issues that they suffer with of mental health and lack of food security, lack of housing security? All of those things contribute to what then becomes an acute event. I do believe that we have the right people on board in our caucus, that when we form government, we are going to be able to tackle these issues in new and innovative ways that are going to be to the benefit of all Canadians.
Bottom line, we need more healthcare professionals. Of course, this is a provincial issue, but where we come in federally is allowing more accreditation for doctors from in our international partners, ensuring that when we bring skilled labor into this country, those that have been doctors or nurses or nurse practitioners in international countries can find ways to become those here in Canada. And to ensure, when we talked about earlier, healthcare transfer taxes and healthcare transfers as a whole, we attach that to capacity and to staffing. All Canadians deserve to have a primary healthcare provider. In the federal government, we also believe that. In the Conservative Party, we want to fight for that. Not only that, mental health. We know through the election, and especially through COVID-19, mental health has to be a top priority. We'll continue to focus on more healthcare supports. And just a side note, this week, the CRTC gave final approval to a new 3-digit hotline for those that are suffering with suicidal thoughts. We are pushing in the House to ensure that that becomes a reality sooner than later. Thank you for those that join me today, Dr. Stephen Ellis, Sandy Sidsworth, MP Mike Lake, and MP Michelle Ferrari. We will continue to produce this podcast on relevant issues. It's my pleasure to represent you as your Member of Parliament for Bay of Quinte and the House of Commons. And if you have any questions or comments, please reach out to me at any time at 613-969-3300 or ryan.williams@parl.gc.ca. Thank you to In Quinte, who produces this series, and we will continue to talk about issues that affect you, affect our lives, and ensure that Bay of Quinte moves to the future. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time in the House.